Welcome to another edition of our podcast, The Confession Box. And this week we have a esteemed guest, Bishop Paul Dempsey, who's just been appointed as an auxiliary in Dublin Diocese. Paul, you're very welcome.
Lovely, Gary. Lovely to be with you today.
Thanks, Paul, for coming in. Paul, you've just been appointed to Dublin as an auxiliary. You were Bishop of Achonry for 4 years. Do you have mixed feelings moving up to Dublin?
Yeah, well, I suppose change is always difficult for any of us, Gary, you know what I mean? Because you're coming into the unknown. 4 years ago, I was appointed as Bishop of Achonry over in the west of Ireland. Before that, I was parish priest in Newbridge in County Kildare, having been a priest of Kildare and Loughlin Diocese for 23 years. So it was an enormous change in my life. Well, number one, I wasn't expecting, first of all, to be appointed bishop. So all the change that comes with that. And so I went to the west 4 years ago. It was in the middle of the COVID pandemic as well. And kind of that seems like years ago, but it's only, you know, 3 or 4 years ago that we were in the midst of all of that. So, yeah, so I moved over there. And then in recent months, I was appointed as auxiliary bishop to Dublin. So it came somewhat as a surprise. Obviously, I wasn't expecting that either, even though the talk about, you know, the diocese in the West and the change and so on that were coming in the church in Ireland, that was in the ether. So it wasn't a major surprise from that perspective, but it all happened very quickly. So to a certain extent, it was a surprise, yeah.
So just for people who are not clear, what exactly happens now to Achonry? It's become part of a larger diocese, is it? Or?
Well, the idea was when I went to the west of Ireland, there were six dioceses in the metropolitan province, it's called. There's four provinces in Ireland and Tuam is one of them. And there are six dioceses in the west of Ireland. Achonry, the diocese that I was serving in, was one of them. And it's a very small rural diocese, as is the neighbouring diocese to it, the Diocese of Killala. So the Papal Nuncio has been quite open that Pope Francis wishes to reduce the number of dioceses in Ireland to have more resources available, not just financial resources, but people resources available in the various dioceses around the country. So this is the beginning of it, where Achonry has, for want of a better word, been married to Elphin Diocese, which is a neighbouring diocese covers Sligo, Roscommon area and so on. And Killala Diocese was married with Tuam Diocese. Now, it's a complicated enough process in the sense that, you know, this hasn't happened actually for about 900 years, believe it or not, Gary. So it's something very new and it's going to take time. Each diocese has its own personality, its own history, its own customs, traditions and so on. And that has to be respected. Obviously, it's not subsuming any diocese into another diocese. Each diocese will bring their own, I suppose, their own history and gifts and talents and so with them. So all of that has to be worked out. But it's going to be a process and it's going to take time. We in a sense, we've never been here before. So it's a little bit learning by doing with it, Gary, I think, at this moment in time.
Okay. And you mentioned there that you had 23 years as a priest in Kildare and Loughlin. It's a tough time for priests these days. We're constantly hearing about, and we report on it in the Irish Catholic, you know, guys feeling, you know, burnt out. Like I was looking to get a priest on the podcast this week, and he just said, look, I'm on my fourth funeral now in 2 days, and I'm just going to make it. And getting covered then seems very difficult, especially weekends. So as an auxiliary bishop coming to Dublin, would that be kind of something that you'd want to kind of work on as part of your ministry?
Yeah, well, first of all, as you say, I was 23 years a priest in Kildare and Loughlin Diocese, and I worked in the parishes of Clane, of Kildare Town, Naas and Newbridge. So in a sense, they're almost suburbs of Dublin. They're very large parishes and so on. So I can identify with what that priest was saying. Now, having said that, I have to admit, and I'm not just saying this, Gary, I loved every minute of my parish ministry as a priest. In fact, it's one of the huge things I miss as a bishop is not having the parish community and serving a parish community, because you build so many relationships with people in parish through the weddings, the baptisms, the communions, the funerals and so on. So I certainly miss that. And I got great energy from that. But of course, as you're saying, I think one of the things certainly in Dublin that has struck me, even I'm only a couple of weeks here at this stage, is the enormity of the parishes. There are absolutely huge parishes in Dublin. And I'm conscious of the generosity of Dublin priests. And again, I'm not just saying that, I've seen that myself. Guys who are in big parishes, who are maybe taking on another neighbouring parish or the responsibility for another neighbouring parish. And again, the generosity of maybe elderly priests. I've met priests in their 80s who are still working in parishes that we wouldn't expect others in society to do. So first of all, the huge generosity of the priests of Dublin and indeed across the country that I've come across. But we do have to ask the question how long that can continue because, you know, in fairness, guys are growing older, so the energy levels are not going to be the same. And I don't think we can expect priests to be able to give the same service as they are today in 10 or 15 years' time. So, and this is not just a priest issue. This is an issue that's going to have to be faced by people and priests now and into the future. How are we going to manage, you know, the whole setup into the future? Because we can't keep going the way we're going. And people will have to understand that. If we don't have priests in the parish, we're still doing things maybe the same as we were 20, 30, 40 years ago, but in very different circumstances. So we need to reflect on that. We need to dialogue about it. We need to talk about it. And we need to come up with imaginative and creative ways of trying to deal with it into the future. And it will be painful. It's going to be painful.
Somebody said to me earlier today, talking about a book that she's launching. Actually, she's your, I think, head of catechetics or an evangelization in Dublin, Patricia Carroll. But she was saying, you know, we've relied on one ministry for so long, but there's so many other ministries. And I thought that was a good way of just explaining that, you know, you can have a number of ministries in a parish and not just rely on the one.
Yeah, I think it's a really important point too, Gary, because, you know, say we focus on the priest, it tends to be kind of a negative kind of focus. Oh, we're, you know, priests are getting older and we're not able to minister the same as we have. That's true. Of course, it's true. But as I said the day I was welcomed into Dublin, it's a model of church that's dying. The church is not dying, you know, but it's about a change of mindset as well. That, of course, there are gifted and talented people out there, you know, the faithful who have so much to offer. We've talked about it for many, many years. And in fairness, in many places it is happening. Like I worked in team ministry in Newbridge and so on, and great lay people there working with us as a team. There was 11 of us on the team in Newbridge. We used to meet every Tuesday. We all had our own kind of ministries to do and so on. But I think we need to emphasize that more into the future. I think Patricia's working in the whole area of the lay catechist and that. But again, it's a shift in mentality, not just for priests, but for people. You know, a big area that I would have worked with in Nason and Newbridge over the years, and we were in fact starting to look at it in a Connery as well, the whole thing of the lay funeral minister, you know, the minister going to the house maybe with the family, planning the funeral, perhaps leading prayers in the funeral home or in the home the night before. Sometimes people might say, oh no, the people who want the priest. Well, actually my experience was they were grand with people. And in fact, sometimes people can be more comfortable with the layperson than maybe with the priest, because they may be distanced from the church and they might be a bit embarrassed to be saying some things to the priest that they could say to the lay minister or whatever. So so I think there's great opportunities there. I do think that we're talking about the vocation maybe to the priesthood, but there's also that vocation, that lay vocation to be a catechist or a pastoral worker. You know, that needs to be worked on too, because, you know, again, one of the things obviously I've noticed in Dublin is the busyness of life. You know what I mean? Everybody is busy. You have parents with young kids. They're busy going to obviously school during the week. They have sports activities and other activities. People are exhausted. But so how can we draw on people who are very busy to give of their life and their service maybe in a parish context? So, you know, it's not just as easy as just saying, oh, just involve lay people. It's a complex enough question that, again, we need to sit down and reflect upon and look at in a very serious way.
Yeah, I think the challenge is trying to draw people into parish in different ways rather than just, you know, you're stopping in for Mass on Sunday, and how to do that. But again, that takes energy, it takes vision, it takes...
Yeah, absolutely. And like, in fairness, I think there is a great old loyalty to local parish. Again, I've only been in a couple of parishes over the last couple of weeks in Dublin. But, you know, and number one, I have to admit, you know, the parishes I've been, there was actually great numbers attending Mass.
Which you were out in Agnes's Road.
I was in Agnes's last Sunday, and I was in Blanchardstown the previous week. And I was really taken aback at the amount of people at Mass. And not only elderly people, I must say, there was a lot of new Irish and younger families maybe present as well. So that was really positive. You know what I mean? It's something we'll probably come back to again. But, you know, so there are very positive things happening in parishes. But as you say, you know, I think there is a great loyalty to the local parish. But it's not just about, you know, popping into 11 o'clock Mass on Sunday or whatever, and then I go home and kind of forget about the parish for the rest of the week. We will have to draw on people a little bit more to give of their time and their talent.
Well, let's talk about the new Irish there a bit. Obviously, with the, you know, everyone's been talking about migration and immigration all coming up to the elections and all. But one area we've been reporting on is migrants involved in the church. You've got Brazilian community down in Church Street. There's the Sire Malabar community and so on and so on. And you've met some of them as well, and you've been very positive about it. It kind of is a positive thing for the church, isn't it?
Absolutely amazing, Gary. I remember a number of months ago, before I ever knew I was coming to Dublin, I had some meeting on a Monday in Maynooth or whatever, but I was down here on a Sunday, and I went to Mass. It's a very good idea for a priest or bishop to go to Mass on a Sunday. I was in ordinary clothes and that, so people wouldn't have known who I was. But it's very good for us to go to Mass. So I went to Mass in a certain parish on the outskirts of Dublin. And again, what I was struck with was, number one, the amount of people at Mass. Secondly, the amount of the international community who were present. There was people, I would say, just from observing now, there was people from some African nations, there was people from India, from the Philippines, and maybe some other countries as well. It was a kids' Mass, so the kids did the prayer of the faithful, there was a little kids' choir. But I have to admit, the life and the energy that the new Irish were bringing to the community, to the parish community, was fantastic. Last Sunday, I was in Inchicore, there, the famous Oblate Church there in Inchicore. In the afternoon, there was a Mass there called, under the title Pilgrims of Hope, lovely, lovely title, where a number of different nations gathered for the Mass. Again, it was such an encouraging, positive experience. You know, young people, young families, their faith is important to them. And I think that's all over the diocese. You know, they're coming to our churches to, you know, and to integrate them more and more into parish life. It's given a whole new impetus, I think, to many parishes. And it's so lovely to see it. And that's why I get quite upset when I hear so much negativity around migration and the whole immigrant issue. Well, number one, what are we talking about? That's the first thing we have to say, because, well, again, just to explain to people my own situation, I'm the youngest in my family. My brother and two sisters joined the 1980s when the economy was in a shocking state in Ireland when I was in school. My brother and two sisters emigrated to the United States. They were known at the time as illegal aliens, such an awful title when you think about it. But that's what they were known as at the time. And they were illegal for many years. But like, we expected as Irish people that my brother and my sisters would be welcomed in the United States, that they would get their rights. And eventually they did. They got the Donnelly visas and they got the green cards and so on and so forth. And everything was grand and made a good living. But they're back in Ireland now. But, you know, our story as an Irish people, we went to England, we went to Australia, we went to America, we went all over the world. And we expected a warm welcome. So I just think it's hugely hypocritical of us to think that there are people now coming to our country and we're not welcoming them. I find that quite shocking myself from my own personal experience. As I was saying there a few moments ago, the great richness that so many people have brought to our country. It would be very interesting, I would say, if, and again, now I don't have the statistics on this, but as I understand it, I did hear something recently that about, I think it's 40% of the workforce in the healthcare service are non-Irish. So wouldn't it be very interesting if we sent them all home? Probably our health service would collapse tomorrow morning if that was to happen. So I think we need to reflect on these things in a very serious way. Now, having said that, I know it is a complex issue, and I know there are certain fears that people have, and I think that needs to be listened to as well and acknowledged. But I just think this huge negativity that there's such generalizations out there that are very unhelpful. It's a serious conversation that we need to have. And I know that certainly the Irish Church is reflecting on this issue, and please God will be producing a pastoral in the coming months on this whole area, because the church needs to speak to it in a very urgent way.
Yeah, and the results of the local elections seem to suggest that, you know, the loudest voices in this, the negative voices, didn't really do that well. You can count on one hand the number of kind of what would be termed far right people that got elected. And yet, I think at least a dozen people from ethnic backgrounds got elected. So there, you know, it seems like the majority of Irish people, I think, are probably, it's probably fair to say, are concerned that the government won't provide, if you're going to bring people here, provide them with accommodation, et cetera, et cetera. But I don't think there's any any a sense of that there's a mass racist response or anything like that?
Yeah, I'd agree, Gary. And like where I was living in when I was in the west of Ireland, I was living in County Roscommon in a place called Ballahadreen. Great name, Ballahadreen. And Ballahadreen, before I even knew of it, before I ever was going there, back, I think it was around 2017, 2018, where there was a very large group of Syrians came. And again, there was kind of initial maybe fears around it. There was a hotel, a former hotel, where the Syrians moved in. But I was very inspired, in fairness, by the Ballahadreen people. And I, as I lived in this situation, the welcome they gave to the Syrians before this was ever an issue was very prophetic in so many ways. And so it's important to acknowledge that. But I think the fair point was being made in the likes of Ballahadreen, and you're touching on it there yourself, is that absolutely people are welcome, but we need to provide facilities for people. Like Ballahadreen was a very small place. Like the school was bursting at the seams. You couldn't get a doctor. You couldn't get a dentist. So like there is a dignity to a person's life. And if we are going to welcome people, then we need to provide the facilities and so on for people so they can live a dignified life. But there's a great richness comes with that, you know, learning from other cultures and for us all to live in peace together is so, so important.
Recently, you were appointed to this steering committee, if I get it right, that is going to oversee this redevelopment of the Pro Cathedral in the city centre. And in his homily, the Archbishop mentioned, you know, there'd been a hollowing out of the city centre. And I suppose the review of the Pro Cathedral was based on that as well. Like, do we stick with this, you know, Pro Cathedral, which is off O'Connell Street, not even on O'Connell Street. It's an awkward enough church with lots of pillars in it and that kind of thing. And, you know, it's a tough area as well. Like, you know, the government put in 10 million just to police it there coming up to Christmas because we know about all the trouble, the riot and all that kind of thing. But I suppose last week the Archbishop kind of shocked everyone in a way with this vision for the Pro Cathedral and vision for the city centre. It sounds like there's monies being provisioned from somewhere for the building works that are going to go on, but also part of the steering committee's role seems to be to find money and people for catechists, for pastoral workers. This sounds like at a time when, you know, the Jesuits have said, well, we're not going to run the parish in Gardiner Street anymore, and the inner city, as the Archbishop said, is hollowed out. It seems to be a real, you know, counterintuitive push into the heartland of the city centre.
Yeah, look, I'm only learning about this myself, Gary, to be quite honest with you. Obviously, I'm just a couple of weeks in the place. But in fairness to Archbishop Dermot, like it is a great sense of vision that he has around the city centre. As you're saying, the whole, like I remember when I was a young fellow coming up to Dublin, you know, the city centre was a very different place from what it is today. So many people have moved out. And yet, interestingly enough, people have also been saying to me that in certain parts of the city centre, there are new apartment blocks going up or in that general vicinity. And, you know, that there are some young people moving in as well into apartments and all. So it's not as if it's been totally hollowed out. There's a kind of a different clientele maybe moving in as well. So it's a little bit more complex than just that. But having said all of that, yes, that whole area around the Pro Cathedral, Westland Row, the Archbishop wants that whole area to be looked at. As you were saying, to a certain extent, it has been hollowed out. But like the church doesn't want to abandon that place. It's a very significant place. It's a very important place. We need to sit down. We're drawing together a committee now in the coming months to people with various experience and so on of the whole pastoral area, which is more important, I think. And the Archbishop said that on the day he was announcing this, that, yeah, of course, there's the physical plant that needs to be looked at. But actually, the more important area of this is mission, the whole thing of the pastoral reach out to people in that area and also to welcome people in to the city centre. Obviously, as you were saying there, it was a very difficult time before Christmas, and you know, maybe there might be fears around the whole thing of coming into the city centre now. So the church needs to be there and say, no, look, you're welcome, you know, and hopefully we can brighten up those very historic buildings and welcome people in and welcome tourists maybe or whatever, but also to work with the local communities there. And there are fantastic communities there. You know, I was welcomed along the day that Bishop Donal Roach was ordained in Westland Row. And God, what I came across of the community there. Powerful community, you know what I mean? People involved in the welcome. There was lovely refreshments afterwards provided by the community there and so on. So there's great life, there's great energy there, and it's trying to harness that a little bit, but listen to what people want, and let's see where it goes. But you know, that's it's a work in progress.
Yeah, it's certainly a vision, and nobody can criticize the Archbishop for not having a vision. But he certainly, I think, caught probably a fair few fellas on the hop of it.
Yeah, yeah, with that one. It's great, and yeah. You know, it's exciting to see those kind of things happening. You know, it's progress. It's trying something new, and I'm always on to try things. Sometimes they don't work, you know, but at least we learn from them when we move on. It's better to try something rather than, you know, sit back and walk away, you know.
You had a good quote somewhere I saw it about from Seamus Heaney, and something about hope was a good worth working for. I saw that somewhere.
Yeah, well, look, at hope is so important, and hope is not just kind of a... a simple kind of things will be grand. You know, we have to work on hope. You know what I mean? In fact, I think it was that Archbishop Tutu from South Africa said many years ago, you know, that he was a prisoner of hope. I think it was an interesting way of looking at hope. But I think that to keep positive, and, you know, we started even today, you were saying about, you know, the challenges facing priests and so on. Yeah, absolutely. But having, you know, experience of the priesthood, obviously myself and parish life, and from talking to priests and having priest friends and so on, you know, we meet great people in parishes. You know what I mean? People who have inspired me, Gary, on my own journey and inspired my faith, you know. And, you know, there are so many positive things happening. We tend to focus so much on the negative and the challenges. And of course, they're there. We haven't got it all worked out, far from it. But in the end of the day, you know, we're not actually fully in charge. It's actually the Lord is actually in charge of all of this. And when you actually acknowledge that and hand that over, you know, things becomes a little bit lighter as well.
It's less stressful.
Absolutely, absolutely. We're on the instruments.
Yeah, before we finish, I just noticed that I've been snooping around your Twitter account, and on June the 7th, the Feast of the Sacred Heart of Jesus, you mentioned that your mum, and you said how the influence of the Sacred Heart of Jesus had been on you or whatever, and in your home. And I just thought, Sacred Heart of Jesus, like, that is... Were you a troublesome boy that your mother had swore? Like?
Yeah, it's how you say it. But yeah, when I used to hear, after doing whatever I was after doing, I'd say, Sacred Heart of Jesus, you knew you had gone wrong there. You know what I mean? Yeah. So, but yeah, looking back at home, and like I've often said this in public at meetings with parents and so on, Gary, you know, sometimes we can make the whole faith thing so complex. Like, my parents, God rest them now, they died many years ago. In fact, when I was a seminarian, they passed away within 12 days of one another. But, you know, they were far from theologians, as I say. But, you know, the simple little thing of, we went to Mass on a Sunday, you know, and, you know, it was the usual thing, like with us all that of that generation. You'd have your bath on the Saturday night, your good clothes were put out, and you got all dressed up for Sunday Mass. And then you had your, you know, your Sunday Mass, and then you had your Sunday dinner together as a family. And then, of course, the good clothes came off and you were put on your glad rags again, and you saw the good clothes again next Saturday night or Sunday morning. But at the same time, that was sending a message to me as a child that, you know, Mass is important. You dress up for this, you know, whatever. Saying the little prayer with me maybe before I went to bed at night. And I used to see my mother, God rest her, saying her prayers in the morning. She used a little prayer book, and she used to kneel by her bedside. And I used to see that as a child. That's how the faith was handed on to me. Those simple little things. It wasn't any big earth-shattering thing or whatever. And that still stands to me to this day. And I often, when I was working in parish, we'd be working with parents and, you know, again, we're talking about parish programs and this, that and the other. Very important, all the rest. But actually, so simple things we do at home. That's how the faith is passed on. You know, that's how it was passed on to me. So I certainly appreciate what my parents did in handing on that faith to me, you know.
Okay, Bishop Paul Dempsey, you're very good to come into us today. And we wish you every success in your new role. You've got your work cut out for you, as they say. But as you say, the Holy Spirit will be there as well, so you don't need to overstress it.
Great. Thanks a million, Gary. Lovely to be with you.